Hey, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast, where Joe Favorito and I talk about the business of sports.
The gambling edition, Tom.
The gambling edition. We are doing a special episode today because of the news that hit the industry just yesterday,
May 14th.
About the Supreme Court decision. About
the overturn of PASPA,
some people call it. We're going to break this down today. And to do that, we've got one of our all-time favorite guests. She's a return guest to the show.
The first ever returning.
Is that right? Yeah. First ever returning guest. Yep. And she's also our colleague at Columbia. Carla Varialli is back in the house. Hey, Carla.
Hi.
All right. So we have, and just to remind everybody, Carla is a sport an expert on sports law, and she practices sports law, and she teaches sports law, and she's terrific. So,
and sitting in front of us is the actual Supreme Court document.
Yes,
which we will take pictures of.
Marked up with red, old-fashioned red, and some purple or blue pen.
That's right.
So Carla's
it's like holding the Magna Carta.
I think between the three of us, we've read and listened to probably about 50 different things since yesterday morning when the news broke. It's an intriguing subject. So let's start with just kind of breaking it down. So Carla,
break it down
in layman's terms. What's happened?
Okay, so what's basically happened here? First of all, I want to say I don't think this decision surprised anyone. I think, in fact, many businesses, leagues, etc., have been ramping up expecting that PASPA was going to be overturned and preparing for that eventuality. So this Supreme Court decision is 31 pages of legal geek out. It is 31 pages that basically talks about what I would consider esoteric constitutional principles. That would be the anti-commandeering principle of the 10th Amendment. Basically, what that means is if the federal government has not reserved those powers or the powers are not given to the federal government, the states have the power to legislate, and the federal government should not commandeer or tell the states what to do. And that's an interesting part of this decision that I'll discuss a little bit more. There's also a lot of discussion in this decision, and it is the basis for the dissenting opinions by Justices Sotomayor and Ginsburg that is touched upon by Justice Thomas, so that's sort of an unusual combination in and of itself, about the doctrine of severability. If there are certain aspects of PASPA that are constitutionally problematic, must we take Justice Ginsburg calls it, a wrecking ball to the whole statute, or are we able to exercise our powers of severability and take some portion?
Didn't you use the metaphor of like the axe versus a scalpel?
Exactly.
Yeah, I heard that language, which I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, it's a very they're very colorful dissents, but by and large, this is a unified Supreme Court. The decision is basically 6-3. I mean, two in dissent, one with Justice Thomas concurring. But he's clearly,
who are the two in dissent?
It's Sotomayor and
Ginsburg. They're notorious.
RBG. Writes a very stirring dissent, but it's a constitutional geek out.
Can I just ask for a second? Because this is an interesting point.
Yeah.
Has this been a partisan issue in any way through the years? I've never really thought about that till now.
Are you talking about politically, judicially?
Well, okay, fair point.
Objection.
sustained. I don't know. So in other words, so you look at Ginsburg and Sotomayor, and you've got considered liberal justices.
Yeah.
Is there a feeling of politicization in this at all? I know that's not a completely fair question, but what's your opinion?
I didn't get an undercurrent of politicization. I got an undercurrent of concern about preserving what should be the province of Congress, what should be the province of the individual states, and a deep concern about what will we do going forward, what we call precedent. What will we do going forward? Are we going to take a wrecking ball to other statutes, or are we going to apply this whole concept of severability? So for me as a lawyer, and when Joe photographs my my annotated version of the decision, that's what came forward. Right. Not a concern about gambling. I mean, the court certainly recognizes that gambling is a controversial issue. It says it's not its place to weigh in on whether it's good or bad for the states. I've had people calling me saying, okay, so what did the Supreme Court say about age limits and who's allowed to gamble? The answer is absolutely nothing. That is left to the individual states, and that is where the rubber is going to meet the road with this decision.
So and first and foremost, in New Jersey.
Well, that's an interesting question. Well,
now,
it may not be.
Mississippi came out.
That's right. You may see states.
So can Joe and I, we just want to know if we can go to Monmouth Park in 2 weeks.
Maybe
on
not
a little
2 weeks.
Cusp Show podcast road trip.
So much will be up to the individual states, but I feel like New Jersey should be very well prepared, as clearly Mississippi was, because I don't know that anybody was expecting it to leapfrog ahead of other
states.
And
West Virginia and Delaware as well.
A number of states. Yeah. And I think that you will see in very short order, because the states are going to want to address this issue and make preparations for this issue.
But there's a story out as of yesterday that Monmouth may be ready for customers
Memorial Day weekend.
By Memorial Day weekend, which is 2 weeks away, or
so
less than 2 weeks away.
You're free to go and bet on your Memorial Day weekend.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, the day, if I was saying, and again, people will be listening to this after the fact, but if there is a potential triple crown the first weekend in June where Monmouth will have a ridiculous amount of people coming in to bet. That's the day that I would point to.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
So day of the NBA Finals, that could be a big day.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. But Carla,
anyway,
back to the process. What has to happen now in New Jersey and the other state for it to actually go to market, so to speak?
I think that that process is already underway, and it is about the states creating a framework, their own. They've got regulation, they've got taxation issues. They have to be responsible for creating their own individual states. And again, what may get a little weird here is that it could vary as you go from state to state, their own framework to authorize and regulate and, of course, tax.
Gambling. So would that include or stipulate specifically where this could be done physically, like a sports book could be?
Yeah,
so my big question, Joe and I talked about this before, is 6 months from now, or less than 6 months, when NFL season has started, could people in MetLife Stadium at Jets or Giants games bet because it's New Jersey?
Well, and we talked about this before we started. There is a bunch of issues, which I'm sure Carla is going to touch on a few of them. One of which is the fact that the credit card companies are not set up yet to do this, which plays in the favor of the casinos, because people have to go in and actually create an account and put money into an account and then do that. The other one, which is the biggest one, is connectivity in stadiums. Because if you don't have consistent, if I'm sitting in the 300 level of MetLife Stadium and someone is in the 100 level and there is betting going on, I have to have the ability to be able to make sure that everyone can get no latency.
Right. Yeah. What I was suggesting was an actual sports book like environment that that allegedly Monmouth Park will have within 2 weeks, meaning multiple screens showing live
games,
data.
Well, they already have it. It's already there.
Right. But I'm saying, so at the beginning of the NFL season, if this all goes through, could that happen in an NFL arena?
As quickly as they could ramp up. I mean, that's not illegal.
But in other words, would the state consider stipulating that it cannot happen where pro sports, which is still, generally speaking, uncomfortable with this, are congregating?
It's possible. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot that, and before we even get to all the permutations about what can the states do to get ramped up, and again, I think there are many states that have already started the process. I don't want to rain on anybody's parade, but I do want to bring up the last paragraph of the majority decision, where Justice Alito says, Congress can regulate sports gambling directly, but if it elects not to do so, each state is free to act on its own. So I want to flag for you that Justice Alito has flagged for Congress, if you want to, you can regulate sports gambling directly. So perhaps you might see Congress acting.
Which is what the NBA and some other leagues have actually advocated for.
Yeah, so right? Before we all get excited about individual states skipping
down. And
that
would override any of the state issues?
If the Congress can regulate it directly.
But that would take a while,
yes.
Especially in this Congress,
especially
right?
Especially in a fractured
yeah.
Congress.
So some of the comparisons that people have made, obviously marijuana being
yes.
done by states. I said to Tom before we started is, excuse me, when the Volstead Act was repealed, it was a lot easier to do because there were bars set up on almost every street corner where you could go in, and it
That's
only
right.
took a few days.
Right.
That doesn't really exist for this because there, unlike London, there aren't gambling parlors that people can go into.
Right.
But are there other precedents like the lottery, where people will look at this and say, oh, the lottery is in different states, is that similar? Or is this something that's kind of totally out there? Is there another business that people can look at and say, this was changed and now this is the way it is and this could kind of go along this path?
I'm trying to, you know, your example of a lottery is a good one. I think it's even referenced in the decision. I'm trying to think of another business or industry that got enabling legislation like kind of all of a sudden and then struggled to keep up with it. It's a little out of the box. I'm not thinking of one right away. But, you know, your example about, you know, other sin and sports things like marijuana legalization.
Yep. And that's taken a while in some states to get it to where it is today, even ones that have passed legislation.
Okay, so with the specter of congressional oversight
yeah.
coming, potentially, or not oversight, but involvement, what are the league lawyers and lobbyists doing today in the absence of the federal statutes or laws? They're going to have to deal with this, right?
Yeah.
Each of the leagues has to deal with this.
Yeah, and I suspect that this decision will be a bit of a boon for lawyers and lobbyists.
So it's good for your law firm, Paula.
Yeah, it's a wonderful development for
search firms, too, someone said. Lots of jobs.
Yeah.
So,
so
1-800-CARLA.
So I think they've probably been thinking about this and preparing for this for quite a while. And again, this decision and all of the reports from the Supreme Court argument, this decision was not a surprise for
right.
anyone. It was just a matter of when is it coming out.
But now, so again, playing out New Jersey, if this all gets established in the next few weeks and suddenly, let's say by the time we're the NBA finals, the NBA would have to negotiate with the state of New Jersey about the so-called integrity fee or royalty that is very controversial.
Yeah, that is
right?
very
in other
controversial.
Words, it doesn't happen without a deal.
No,
like
they
in
would
what, like in Nevada, the leagues aren't making money from the legalized betting, right?
They're not. But there's also no integrity fee, by the way, in Nevada.
Right, but
isn't
but,
that
but,
interesting?
But right, so that's what I'm warning. So if that's a precedent legally at the state level, would that influence the legislators in the other states? But you can imagine the leagues, and even Adam Silver has talked about this publicly.
Right.
We want our, and he floated the idea of 1%.
Right.
So does that get established in the next 2 weeks so people can bet on the NBA playoffs in June?
It would be hard for me to imagine something like this getting negotiated and effectuated in
right.
2 weeks. I don't think the integrity fee or integrity tax or whatever you want to call it is a done deal.
Right.
They may want it, but it's still got to be.
And then technically that would have to be done state by state by state for each league.
Yeah.
With the attorneys general. Yeah.
Unless there's something coming down the pike on the federal side.
Right.
Of this,
but even there,
we
would agree that would take quite some time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so before we all go skipping to the slot machine and the betting window, it takes a while for the, even though they've had some time to ramp up, it would take a while for the infrastructure to be there.
So, Carla, when you look through the 30-something pages.
31.
What are some of the other things? Are there one or two other things that popped out that people probably either aren't thinking about or kind of glossed over from a business perspective that people should be aware of?
From a business perspective, I don't know if you would consider this from a business perspective, but when I read the decision, I didn't know some of the history behind PASPA. For example, I didn't know that the voters of New Jersey voted, I mean, I would use the word overwhelmingly, I think it was 64%. They wanted to enable gambling within the jurisdiction. And it was PASPA that prevented that. Mm-hmm. And the court went out of its way to flag that. I also thought that it was very creative and interesting. And the senators, I think Ray Lesniak was one of them, took the initial bill, reconfigured it in a way to get around PASPA, and that's the one that was at issue in this case. And they did it instead saying, or sort of twisting the words and saying, instead we're going to say that you cannot repeal. I'll find it somewhere in my 31 pages, but they described the way the senator went about creative legislating and getting the words of the statute changed, or the what New Jersey wanted to effectuate, and it wound up working.
You are very steeped in the history of mixed martial arts and the legalization in states.
Yes.
Are there any comparisons to this? Is there, you know, some cooks union sitting out there in some state that, you know, like Dana White allegedly always talked about, that was blocking legislation in New York? Is there kind of any similarity to what MMA had to go through state by state that could possibly happen with sports gambling?
I don't know enough about each and every state, but I imagine that there are people who are still concerned or have outmoded ideas about gambling. And that
some senator from Utah, was one, sorry.
And are resistant to it. Of course, there's always people, one of the objections is that it's addictive, not wanting to enable people who have addictive personalities. But again, I think that those are old ways of thinking and that they've given way to what I like to call the Silverian, Adam Silver's theory of
Silverian.
Embrace
it. I love it. Yeah.
You know, it should be legal. It should be regulated, it should be monetized, it should be taxed. And again, I think he's used the example of the stock market. Even though it is ripe for people getting in over their head, insider trading, nefarious conduct, we don't outlaw the stock market. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that invalidates that. But what we do is we regulate it and we police it. And, you know, that's another piece of this that I think is interesting on the business end. Even though I look at this from the legal end first, on the business end, there is a real opportunity for people with compliance, regulation, mm-hmm. you know, after we get over the lobbying and mm-hmm. the legislating.
Well, even on the media side, I mean, so there's been a lot of articles and analysis just in the last 24 hours on the winners and losers of this decision. And overwhelmingly, everybody's saying this is a boon. This will be a boon to sports media broadly.
How about Mark Cuban
defined.
Saying that franchises will double?
Mark Cuban went on record as saying franchises will double.
I think he said they owners are looking at the fact that their franchises have doubled in value. He's that bullish on it.
Of course, he owns a team that helps.
Yeah.
Well, that's what everybody was saying. Also, it was announced yesterday that the Panthers are likely to sell for, I think, $2.2 billion.
Or today, this week.
So did the Panthers management call back the buyer and say, by the way, it's now 4.4?
Yeah.
I don't think so. So on the media side, it's an interesting moment in time because there's the kind of existential threat to mainstream media with cable pay TV subscriptions declining, losing the attention of young people with e-sports and things like that. So it seems like everybody's now kind of feeling already reinvigorated that they've found their white knight has finally come to combat all these issues that are quite challenging. But I'll ask you guys this question, and Joe, I want to get your opinion on this as well. Do we, just because it's going to be legal more widely and very accessible, mobile phones, et cetera, does that mean everybody's going to get into this?
No.
That's kind of what I'm missing here.
I think, you know, and we touched a little bit about MMA. MMA, esports, gaming, daily fantasy. Everyone was, you know, 3D TV. You know, everyone was going to change the world. And in reality, everybody runs to something, says, oh, look, Halley's Comet. They run back the other way. And then it kind of levels out in the middle. I mean, there's no doubt that there is a market for this. But I don't know how you feel, Carla, but no one knows what the market really is because it's never really been. It's always been, oh, $18 billion was, well, nobody really knows for sure.
Right.
Yeah. So, well, again.
But how do you feel about it?
I think I go back to, I was very persuaded when Adam Silver came to Columbia University and spoke years ago about this subject. And what gripped me was he said, this is a tool for fan engagement.
Correct.
I mean, that wound up feeling so prescient, right?
Yes, absolutely.
He was really ahead of things when he said that. And a light bulb went off in my head about that. Of course, and it may bring some new fans. Whether that's sustained over time, I think as Joe said, is a different story.
And I also think the fan engagement part is valuable because if this is a mechanism to keep people in a game till the fourth quarter and they go and buy two more hot dogs, three more t-shirts, that's
or
another.
Or come early, as Ted Leotz has already noted. Yep. So if you have a night game
for
an NBA game in the fall, come early and do bet on college football.
Yep.
Right.
Or Premier League.
So that's ancillary revenue, where I think that's the way the teams and the leagues will view this versus saying, oh, I'm just going to sit there and rake in all this money because all these people are gambling while things are going on. That's part of it, but I think the overall experience in those other places, and you know, and we talked about this, that the position of director of gaming for teams is going to be a thing now. You know,
right. But, yeah, and also I want to get your guys' opinion on the advertising. So one thing we all noted a few years ago, which when DFS got all its investment capital, basically it was ubiquitous advertising. It'll go down in history as one of the most remarkable marketing occurrences ever. Are we about to see the same thing? So I'm struck by each weekend I watch Premier League, and I'm always struck by the incessant gambling digital advertising that's on screen, as well as the jersey logos, which in many cases are for gambling businesses. Is that what we're going to be seeing in American arenas and stadia 2-3 years from now? Because it's ultimately, guys, it's a game of customer acquisition. So whether that's Caesars wanting to do it, or the NFL proprietarily, or Yahoo Sports, or ESPN, or the new company we're going to start, we need to get users, gamblers, on our platform. We need their data, we need their credit cards, we need their time and engagement. So it's going to be a customer acquisition and retention game, just like DFS was and still is, at least for now. So what do you think about that?
Well, on the legal end of this, and not necessarily the marketing and the business, but I mean, who owns that data? Who gets to share that data?
Or but the legality of advertising it in stadium, that probably wouldn't be an issue in the states that are participating,
right? If it's legal, right.
Yeah. And you already see the Devils, the Raptors, the Flyers all have poker stores already because it's legal in New Jersey.
Right.
Every team where it's legal has a casino point. You can't go to Mohegan Sun sponsors the last 5 minutes of the Knicks. So I don't think that will change. Now,
will not change. I'm suggesting
it's going
a domination of in stadium and in arena advertising.
So the perfect example is I was in Vegas for Rugby Sevens, which was played at the home field of UNLV. On the wall is an ad at an NCAA stadium for William Hill. I went to visit the home of the MLB, the Mets AAA team, the 51s, Las Vegas. On the wall is an ad right next to, by the way, next to their marijuana ad was their ad for William Hill.
Right.
So William Hill being the first, but certainly not the last, you will see Paddy Power. You will see everyone come in. And by the way, also don't forget the WNBA on their front of their jerseys has three teams that have casinos.
Right.
So I don't think, I think you're going to see, hopefully for all our friends who sell advertising, it will be like what happened with FanDuel and DraftKings. Although I think it's going to be, I think people have learned.
It just seems like there's going to be so much money there. It's going to change the calculus kind of where this stuff gets marketed. So could you see a league a few years from now adopting the European model of actually having the primary mark be the partner and the secondary mark
a few years
the logo?
From now, I don't know about about a few years from
now? I say inevitable in this country. And I'm not saying 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
But just watch European sports. Because all I'm saying is that there's so much money compared to any other aspect of the marketing world that we've encountered in sports. I think the leagues and teams are going to want to take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's logical.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's anybody more excited about the prospect of gambling coming to sports than Tom Richardson.
Well, I love the disruption. Yeah. Well, we've been talking about it, and you know, on this podcast and in our classes, we've been talking about this subject for years. And also, as people that live through all three of us in different ways, the daily fantasy craze.
Right.
Which I always describe it as a proxy war,
right,
you know, for what was coming. And now it's like game on. So
if we were doing this podcast in 1927, Tom would be sitting there right now with a giant bottle of bourbon, just drinking as we're going. Because
ready to open my speakeasy into an Applebee's. Yeah.
But you know what I think is interesting, too, because you use the word disruption, and it is disruptive. But when I read this decision, it's steeped in constitutional principles, and it's not disruption.
Right.
It's steady as she goes.
Right.
And it's not even controversial within the Supreme Court panel. I mean, we've seen many splits that are 5-4. We've seen many, mm-hmm. you know, dissents splintering off from a main opinion. This is a pretty cohesive decision. And it's, to me, traditional and the antithesis of disruption.
So, by the way, I think this is Lin-Manuel Miranda's next play.
Great, I want to get in on that one. All right, last question. So let's just go back as we wrap this conversation up about where this might go on the federal level. Because already Orrin Hatch has introduced the idea of maybe trying to oppose this. How did you characterize it before?
Being on the wrong side of history.
Well, yeah, that's one way of saying it. Yeah. But you don't have to make a formal prediction, but what are your thoughts about where this might go? Because it seems like if the leagues, with their enormous amount of power, especially with the billionaire owner backers,
And their lobbyists,
well-compensated lobbyists, are going to be pushing for this, that the new generation of congressional leadership probably would side with them over time.
And by the way, the American Gaming Association, which is the lobbyists for the casinos, are looking for federal regulation as well.
So, what do you think?
Well, politics is one of my favorite sports. And I think I agree with what Joe said earlier. I can't imagine, you know, federal Congress intervening in a way that now clamps this down. It just doesn't make sense. The population has changed. People's values have changed. What kind of oversight happens or regulation is a great question. And I mean, I think we're going to have to see how that unfolds.
And I also think the court of public opinion for whenever you're listening to this, can you imagine if you are a congressman in New Jersey and said, oh no, we're going to wait a little while now and see.
That's not going to work.
So you want to be unelected pretty soon. And by the way, the man in the White House, I don't think has weighed in on this yet, right?
No, I don't think so.
He's too worried about other things, which is probably the right thing.
I think he has said, ironically, as a former owner of casinos, he's against gambling.
Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
He has, but he has not come out and spoken about this decision. He hasn't said anything, to my knowledge, about PASPA, but notwithstanding his history as a casino owner, if that's what we construe his business to be, he's been opposed to it.
Right.
He has some newfound morality about gambling, I guess.
Okay, just yes or no questions for the last two. Will this indeed improve or increase franchise rights in the, let's say, the 5-year time span?
I think yes.
Okay. And will it, Joe, will it increase media rights deals?
I don't think it will increase media rights deals per se. I think it creates a new category, which will eventually drive up price. You know, which will be something, again, like when we look back and say, you know, leagues threw in mobile rights 10 years ago, not knowing. I think this will be another category that absolutely is not segmented out yet.
Okay.
So,
Wow. A lot to think about.
It's exciting, as you can tell from this panel.
Yes. So
Tom's jumping out of his seat.
That's because I want to read more of your markup.
Wait till people see the pictures.
Of the documentation. Carla Varielli, thank you so much. That was terrific.
Oh, so just remind everybody where they can find you on Twitter. So.
Okay, my Twitter handle is my name. It's Carla, C-A-R-L-A, Varielli, V-A-R-R-I-A-L-E, and I'm a partner at Hefkins, Rosenfeld, Ritzert, and Varielli in
right.
New York.
Who can help with all your sports gambling needs? Operators are standing by.
Right.
All right, Joe, that was fun.
Yep.
So we'll have to revisit this, maybe get some executives from the gambling biz in the next couple weeks.
There's no shortage of people who will talk about this.
And based on what I saw in the media the last 24 hours, lots of people like talking about this topic.
Yeah.
So we'll have to revisit it. All right, well, thanks everybody for listening to the latest edition of The Cusp Show. Appreciate it. We'll see everybody next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University sports podcast. I'm Tom Richardson, and the host is Joe Favorito. Production assistant this week is Columbia student Reese Eisenman. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple's podcast app, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and other key platforms. You can also find it at blogtalkradio.com/The Cusp Show. And you can get in touch with us on Twitter at CU_SPS_sports. Also, you can find out more about our program, Columbia University Sports Management Program, by going online at sps.columbia.edu/sports-management. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.